Baseball is back.
He doesn't want a super spreader out there in the middle of the field.
The season is different. On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
You guys wanted to do it. You've been wanting to do it for months.
There's a lot to talk about.
Who are you kidding? Don't give me all that bull crap.
And this is the place to do it. This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y, Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, Budweiser, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The big picture goal here was to make sure that we were setting ourselves up to win consistently and to be able to compete for championships every year. And obviously, this summer has shown we're certainly not there right now. And it was a question of getting ourselves to a point where we could do that consistently and making sure that every move that we consider, we're measuring up against that goal. I think with everything we're able to do, you know, we feel like we've taken steps towards that. We still have a ways to go. You know, there's a lot more that we want to do to put this organization on more sustainable footing. We also know we have a lot of talent in-house, which is a great place to start. You know, in totality, I think we can look at the talent we brought in the organization. We can look at the sustainability of the roster, the depth of the talent base, and feel that we've taken positive steps.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of zoned out there towards the end. You know why? Because it's just so robotic, and that's the problem. This is so robotic. It's so formulaic. But my question is, have they taken those steps? Have the Boston Red Sox taken those steps? And that's Chief Baseball Operator, Officer, Chief Nerd, Chaim Bloom, the General Manager of the Boston Red Sox, the President of Baseball Operations, whatever you want to call it. He makes the baseball decisions, allegedly, with this franchise, and that's Chaim Bloom earlier this week on the trading deadline, the steps that the team has taken. And that's where I want to start tonight. The steps that the Red Sox have taken or have not taken to position themselves for success in the future. Because we all know that 2020 is a joke, right? The season is frankly kind of a joke, but the organization in 2020 is frankly a joke. But if they turn this thing around, and if they get this thing back on the rails quickly, well, then you just say, hey, it was a 60-game season, they needed a reset, they chose that, you know, opportunity to reset, and they did the job. I'm just not convinced that they've taken enough steps to do that job correctly, and I'm not convinced that they really have the ability to do that job correctly, and more importantly, do that job quickly. Because these are the Boston Red Sox we're talking about here. They cannot go into a long rebuild. Absolutely, positively, unequivocally, they cannot go into a long rebuild. The Red Sox should never be in a situation where they go into the Chicago White Sox plan or the Houston Astros plan or even the Chicago Cubs plan before Theo Epstein got to Chicago and the plan that he continued, I guess in many ways, the plan that he really put into place to create a, you know, highly competitive ball club and a ball club that won the World Series in 2016. But there were a lot of lean years there in Chicago. There were a lot of lean years in Houston. There have been lean years in Chicago with the White Sox. And across baseball, you have seen this 3 to 5 year rebuilding plan, and that will never, ever be acceptable for the Boston Red Sox. So when I hear Chaim Bloom say, all right, you know, we need to take the steps and the steps that we've taken to be competitive in the future, I just really wonder if they've taken enough steps. And I'll get your thoughts tonight as well. 617-779-0985. We've got Jimmy Stewart back there as well with Kristen Sermon and you on this Labor Day weekend. Hopefully you're heading off to someplace enjoyable, and hopefully you're going to enjoy this weekend. But I took a look at this team today, and I went on the 40-man roster. And yeah, on RedSox.com, I went and checked out the 40-man roster, and I was just struck by how far away they truly are. Red Sox, first team in baseball to get to the 25-loss mark this season. And as we take, you know, stock or stake in the franchise tonight, the state of the franchise, the reviews aren't good. All right? You know, when you look at the future here and when you look at the present, it's hard to feel great about the position of this team moving forward, because I do not see many great answers to turn this thing around quickly. And that's what they have to do because they're the Red Sox. And if they go 3 years where they're irrelevant in the current landscape in Boston sports, like, do you recover from that? I mean, that's a serious question. Do you recover from that? So there will be a lot of pressure on Chaim Bloom and quickly to turn this thing around, because he may think that he's got time. He may think that he can do the plan that's been implemented around baseball, as I just said, with the White Sox, the Cubs, the Astros, like, you name it. Hell, even the Rays. He may think that he has time to build a sustainable product, but I would just say this to Chaim Bloom. John Henry will call you eventually, and maybe you don't know this is coming because you're new around these parts. I am. You don't know how this really works around here, but eventually John Henry is going to give you a call and say, build a winner, build it now. Here's some money. Go and do it. And you better be able to do it. Otherwise you'll be out of a job and fast, because this market cannot sustain a 3 to 5 year rebuild. And it shouldn't. We should expect better. This is Boston. This is one of the few markets that maybe still gives a damn about this sport, although I kind of question that with every single passing day. But Boston will not accept a 3 to 5 year plan. And when I looked at the 40-man roster today, I was just struck by how this was not 2013. You know, think about 2012 and the disaster that this franchise underwent in 2012 with Bobby Valentine, and then they turn it around the very next year and win the World Series. That's not happening next year. Because think about it. In 2012, you had John Lester. You had Clay Buchholz. You had legitimate big league pitchers who had underperformed. Hell, you even had John Lackey coming back off Tommy John. He comes back. He's the Lackey of old. You've got, you know, three big league pitchers in your starting rotation. Pretty good ones to boot. Even Buchholz that year was outstanding before he got hurt. And you're off and running, and you win a World Series essentially as a result. But you don't have anything near that this time around. Because I went through the 40-man and calculated, in my opinion, in my estimation, how many bona fide, undebatable, big league pitchers this team has on the 40-man roster right now, including the two guys who were hurt in Rodriguez and Sale. Jimmy Stewart, would you like to guess how many big league pitchers I determine the Red Sox have in their organization right now?
Three.
Five. They have five. And the problem is, three of those guys, Nathan Eovaldi, Chris Sale, Eduardo Rodriguez, all have injury concerns. I'll take Matt Barnes and Martin Perez as well as two other big league starters, two other big league pitchers. Forget starters, just pitchers in general. Five guys, and I don't think you can make an argument for too many more. You want to make an argument for Josh Taylor or Darwinson Hernandez or Phillips Valdez, that's fine. You can make that argument to me, and I guess I'll listen to it, but you get the point. You absolutely get the point. This team is so far away when it comes to this pitching staff. If you've got five guys and three of them can't stay healthy, you're a long, long, long way away, especially when you don't have anybody coming up through the system. So it's hard not to feel discouraged about the state of this franchise right now. So what I'll do here, Jimmy, I will give you the Matt McCarthy plan for accelerating the improvement of this team.
Ooh.
How about that? You like that? This is a three-step plan. And am I ripping this off from Tony Maserati last week? Damn right I am. Imitation is the best form of flattery, Maz. So here is the three-point plan for how you fix this thing quickly. And when I say fix, I just want to make it clear. This will not build a championship team in 2021. There is, I think, essentially no way you can build a championship quality team in 2021. But you can get close, and you can take steps to make this thing competitive and position yourself well moving into the future. Step number one, you unload any hitter in this organization not named Bogarts, Devers, or probably even Tristan Casillas for pitching help. I make Andrew Benintendi available. I make Alex Verdugo available. I make just about anybody available, any hitter in this organization available to add pitching help. And the reason for that and the philosophy for that is that this franchise consistently across now essentially four general managers has proven to me in the last 10 to 15 years that they have absolutely no problems developing hitters. We're getting great reports about Tristan Casillas from the player pool. I mean, this guy has lit it up. Like, people are comparing him to Joey Votto down there. People say that this guy is legit. That's another guy that looks like they will have developed. They developed Devers, Bogarts, Betts, Benintendi. You know, even if you have problems with Benintendi, and I do, but they've developed plenty of hitters over the last 10 years. I'm going to run down the list. Jacoby Ellsbury, Michael Chavis. And I'm not crazy about Michael Chavis, but hey, listen, is he a big league player? Yes. Have they developed him? Yes. Bobby Dalbec, he's up now. They don't have problems developing hitters, but they can't develop pitchers. They absolutely can't. So you trade just about any hitter in your organization to get young pitching help. That's the most important thing. You need to value pitching over hitting at this point, because you've proven to me that you can go into any draft and find a hitter. You can develop any hitter at any time, but you haven't developed a starting pitcher since Clay Buchholz. And not that Clay Buchholz was really anything to write home about. But that was a long, long time ago. We just saw the Clay Buchholz just turned like 36 or 37. People were replaying his no-hitter in 2007 on Twitter the other day. It's a long time ago that you developed a starting pitcher. So that's step number one. Step number two is that you sign bats. You use your money. You use your financial might, which they will use eventually now that the luxury tax has been reset here. You use that money to sign hitters. You don't sign pitchers. It's just a sure bet. George Springer is a free agent. I sign him. I think he's perfect for this team. Marcell Ozuna. Jimmy Stewart hates that one, but I like it. Marcell Ozuna. Is he a big league hitter, big league power hitter? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, when he's got good bats around him.
But you know what? They do have good bats around him, and they would have good bats around him. Bogarts, Devers. Again, they develop hitters. So I'm not concerned about being able to go out and find a bat.
I'm not getting hyped up over a guy who crushed Red Sox pitching at Fenway Park, and I actually got to see him hit one that hasn't landed yet.
Kyle Hart. But that's my point, Jimmy, is that you keep trotting guys out there like Kyle Hart, who you developed, that are going to give up moonshots like that. You need to trade hitters in the organization.
Why? So pitchers. My fans can see what they can do against me, and then I sign them, and they don't do jack bleep?
Hey, that's the whole point, though, is that you can develop a hitter and you can't develop pitching. So you need to use your resources to trade for pitching. So you can always go out and sign a hitter, whether it's Ozuna, whether it's anybody else. George Springer's my guy. I think he's your guy. That's the guy you sign.
Keep J.D. Martinez over Ozuna. I'd rather have somebody who can use the entire ballpark.
I'm good with J.D. Martinez. I'm good. You want to get into that on the other side? Let's do some J.D. Martinez talk.
Let's do hardcore baseball.
Why not? It's Friday of Labor Day, Jimmy. Why the hell not? If you want to join, you want to talk about the ultimate agenda-free Friday on the Baseball Reporters, this is it. 617-779-0985. You want to talk about anything in the baseball world, anything in the Red Sox organization, majors or minors? Now's your chance. Let's do it. Let's have some fun. We'll continue the three-step plan. We'll talk about the future of J.D. Martinez. I want to talk about the future of Andrew Benintendi as well. That's coming up next. It's Matt McCarthy in for Tony Maserati tonight on the Baseball Reporters.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
No Maz tonight. It's Matt McCarthy in on the Baseball Reporters, taking you up until 7 o'clock, 617-779-0985. Talking about the future of the Red Sox, because you're sure as hell not going to talk about the 2020 Red Sox, that's for sure. Real quick, just to wrap up the three-point plan here, for the Matt McCarthy three-point plan for fixing the Red Sox. Step number one, which is you unload any hitter in the organization, not named Bogarts or Devers, for pitching help. Step two, you then use your financial might to sign bats, replace some of the hitters that you unload, Andrew Benintendi, hell, even Alex Verdugo. You go out and use your money on the market, because hitters are a better option than pitchers on the market. They just are. And the third and final step, and it's a minor one, but it's still big when it comes to the future of the organization, you have to hit on the draft. You do. You suck this year. You're going to have one of the top picks. You might have the highest pick you've ever had in franchise history. You cannot miss. You cannot miss. So you can't draft Trey Ball like you did in 2013. Hell, you really can't even draft Andrew Benintendi like you did when you had the seventh overall pick in 2016. Because he's a big league player, but is he an impact big league player? I have my questions about that. So that's the three-step plan. You have your plan. You let me know. 617-779-0985. But I did mention Marcell Ozuna, which went right up the tailpipe of executive producer Jimmy Stewart. He hates Marcell Ozuna for some reason. I don't particularly understand why. You say that Marcell Ozuna is a product of A, having good hitters in the lineup around him, to which, Jimmy, I would say, aren't most hitters? I mean, not every hitter, but most hitters are generally a product of the guys hitting around him. And B, what you saw this week was a product of, you know, the ass that is the Red Sox pitching staff, which I will grant you, that is totally true. Like, I'm not going to judge Marcell
Ozuna. I could have at least hit Pesky's pole off of one of these Red Sox pitchers.
Right. No, you could do that. You'd pull Kyle Hart. You a right-handed hitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you'd pull Kyle Hart.
I'm a slap hitter from the left side.
Yeah, no, you see Kyle Hart with his 88-mile-an-hour fastball just like, you know, middle.
I'm Rob Deere from the right side.
Yeah, you'd turn around on that fastball pretty easily, I'd say. But you think Ozuna is not a good option. And here's the thing. I'll say this. Does Marcell Ozuna get me truly excited? No, but this is the advantage that you should have as the Red Sox, right? You trade Andrew Benintendi, get a little pitching help, then you need an outfielder. Okay, well, you go out and sign Marcell Ozuna. Like, it's not that hard. You're a better team if you do that because you get pitching help as part of the whole process. You see what I'm saying, Jimmy?
So I would rather keep JD Martinez because we know what he is. We know he can play here. And it's 2 years and $38 million for a 33-year-old DH. Ozuna will come here. He might play left field. He might not. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a very good left fielder. But
you don't
for
need to be
Ozuna,
here.
You have to commit at least probably 5 years and $20 million. So you're right back in the same place. And I think it's a downgrade. I'd rather keep JD Martinez for the next 2 years than sign Ozuna for $5 and $100
million. All right, so first and foremost, if JD Martinez opts out and he will have the option...
He's not opting out. He's opting in.
Okay, and you know what? In that case, I say you kick the tires. Whereas this year, I would have unloaded Martinez just for the money at the deadline. But if he opts back in, to your point, Jimmy, all right, you got 2 years, $38 million left. You kick the tires and you see if you can get some pitching help. But if not, then you take it. You say, okay, well, he's back in. We can build the team around him. But you still trade Benintendi. You still trade even Verdugo. I would do that, and you go out and you sign a hitter. You sign an outfielder. I think you can do both. Because
now you have two DHs in your lineup?
I mean, you've got one at third base and Rafi Devers, too.
So now you've got three DHs in your lineup.
So you're a defense guy. You're a UZR guy.
No, not UZR, but I want a player who can actually catch the ball consistently.
I will say, I am generally I generally value defense more than most. But I'm not concerned about Marcell Ozuna playing left field at Fenway Park. Manny Ramirez played out there for 8 years, all right? So, like, I'm not too concerned about left field at Fenway Park. And I think you move Rafi Devers to first base if you have to. So, I'm not too concerned about defense at the middle, absolutely. But defense at the corners, particularly when you play 81 games at Fenway Park, I'm not as concerned about that.
So I would rather keep JD Martinez because he's going to opt in, because who wants to be a free agent in this economic climate? Mm-hmm. And then I would go out and get George Springer.
See, Springer is the guy I would take over Ozuna, 100%. I mean, Springer is, but I'm just saying, I think your Ozuna hate is a little misguided.
He has a good year every other year. Neat.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the first Red Sox player in history to do that, right? So George Springer is absolutely the guy the Red Sox should target this offseason. I mean, you talk about a guy who can come in and be a leadoff hitter, which they don't have right now. Andrew Benintendi isn't a leadoff hitter. I'm not necessarily sure I'm sold on Verdugo in that spot anyway. And plus, I would trade Verdugo for pitching help, but you know how I feel about that. Springer is the perfect fit. Hey, well, he's from New England, so that's just a bonus. How about that?
It's Connecticut. It kind of doesn't count.
I mean, it's New Haven. It's right on the line. It's right on the line. Depends on what side of the river he's on there. That's the real question. So, but George Springer is the perfect fit for what this Red Sox team needs moving forward, because he can come in, he can play center field if you let Jackie Bradley Jr. walk, which I pray to God you do. He can play right field, which you basically need a second, you know, center fielder to play right field at Fenway Park. He can be your leadoff hitter. He's just an enjoyable player. He's a player that I would say, you know, I'll tune in to watch him play a little tonight. He's a solid ball player, leadoff hitter, perfect fit. Perfect fit for this team. This is where Chaim Bloom can get creative. I think particularly in the outfield, I keep going back to Benintendi and Verdugo. I think those guys are redundant. I do. So you go out, you spend a little money on the outfield spot somewhere, you know, center, right, left, doesn't really matter. You get a hitter to play in the outfield. George Springer, the perfect candidate. You trade Verdugo, you trade Benintendi, get some pitching help, and you go from there. That's what I think they should do. That gives them some flexibility moving forward. I think that's one of the first things I'd look at if I were Chaim Bloom. 617-779-0985. Bob's in Methuen. You're up next with Matt McCarthy in for Maz on the Baseball Reporters. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Good.
Are you talking about trading Andrew Benintendi for pitching?
Yes.
Is this the same Andrew Benintendi that I've been watching since the All-Star break in 2018 struggle badly?
No.
I don't know. He hasn't? Go back and take a look at his numbers.
No, I wasn't denying that. I'm saying that you're making a fair point, Bob.
I don't know what he would bring on the trade market, but I think it would be very, very little. And this whole idea that this team should have untouchables is absurd. If I could get pitching for any one of the players on that roster, I would have to strongly consider it. The problem is they traded Betts and somehow did not get a single pitcher in that deal.
Oh, it's criminal.
It's impossible to do.
It's criminal, and you're so right about that, Bob, and thanks for the call. I mean, if you went back through the history of baseball and looked at the number of MVP-quality players that have been traded, I would bet you that in just about every single one of those trades, a pitcher was involved. Now, I suppose they did technically try for Brusdar Graterol before they got a little cold feet about that, either because of the medicals or either because of the backlash they were getting in the deal. But the fact of the matter is they traded Mookie Betts for position players, and they haven't developed a starting pitcher in 10-plus years. That's unacceptable to me, and it goes back to the point why I would trade Verdugo, too. I like the player. I think they got a good player, an electric player, a player with some personality. But if you can trade him for pitching help, I do it. And Andrew Benintendi, sure, the value is not exactly great there right now, but the Cleveland Indians could use an outfielder. Yeah, that's a team that develops. They've developed more starting pitchers in the last 10 minutes than the Red Sox have developed in the last 10 years. You get a prospect, maybe it's not a sure thing, but maybe a guy who you say, well, this guy might be a 3 or a 4, you know, a third or a fourth pitcher in the bigs, I'd do that. I'd make that trade at this point. And speaking of Benintendi and, you know, and trades, we're going to start to look back. If this does look like that Benintendi is this type of player, and this is who he is, we're going to look back at Dave Dombrowski choosing to keep Andrew Benintendi over Yoan Moncada as a regrettable decision. There's one to keep in your back pocket for the next few years. You better believe I'll be going to it. That's for sure. 617-779-0985. There is a pitcher who is on the roster who actually doesn't completely suck. I just wonder why he's still here. We'll get to that next. It's Matt McCarthy in for Tony Maz tonight on the Baseball Reporters.
Now, more hot takes on a short season. It's the Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matt McCarthy in for Maz tonight on the Baseball Reporters, 617-779-0985. You can also tweet at me, at Matt McCarthy, 98.5. We do have a couple tweets and a few texts from my people around the game. First and foremost, God bless you for talking 2020 Red Sox on a Friday afternoon of Labor Day weekend. Thank you very much, kind sir. Thank you very much. Not all heroes wear capes. The hardest hour in Boston sports radio, Friday of Labor Day weekend, talking about the 2020 Boston Red Sox. I do want to say that not all heroes wear capes, but you know, maybe I should even put one on. How about that?
You wear headphones.
I do. That's right. And another text from somebody, tied in. Who the F is Jairo Munoz?
What's that?
That's a guy who allegedly plays for the Boston Red Sox.
Apparently he's having a day.
He's having one hell of a day, allegedly. So they say.
When you and Carrabas don't know who a player is, oof.
Not
that's
good.
That's a thing.
Not good. Not good. I do this this podcast, Jimmy, called Hardcore Baseball. And this is beyond hardcore for me. This is like extreme hardcore. This is like banned stuff right here. This is no. But I do know one pitcher on the Boston Red Sox, and his name is Martin Perez. All right, he's one of the few big leaguers that you have. One of five that I calculated. Again, to start the program, I said I went through the 40-man roster. I calculated that the Red Sox have five. Make that five big league pitchers on their 40-man roster. Chris Sale, Nathan Eovaldi, Eduardo Rodriguez, Matt Barnes, and Martin Perez. They should have four, because I don't know why Martin Perez is still here. This guy's pitching well. I mean, well by like 2020 Red Sox standards. He's got like a 4.07 ERA, which is good. It's fine. It's perfectly acceptable. It's a major league effort every single time from Martin Perez. Why is he still here? Can somebody explain that to me?
Because you couldn't get a player be named later for him.
I mean, how is that possible, though? How could you not get international bonus pool money for this guy? Like, what is the point? You know, he actually gives you a chance to win, which at this point you shouldn't even want. You probably should be tanking, because there are two kids at the top of the draft in Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, Al Leiter's son or nephew or something like that, both from Vanderbilt, who are, you know, legit guys at the top of that draft. They'll probably go in the first two or three picks. So you should be tanking. Why is Martin Perez still on this roster? You were able to get international bonus pool money for Kevin Pillar or a player to be named later. Hell, you even got, I think, two decent prospects from the Padres for Mitch Moreland. Why is Martin Perez still here? So when we opened the program, we heard that cut from Chaim Bloom talking about the steps that they've taken, you know, to improve the team moving forward. I would say, okay, well, you took a step or two, baby steps, tiny steps, but you didn't go far enough. And that's the problem, is they did not go far enough. This thing should have been stripped down as much as possible, and it feels like they tried a little bit but didn't try hard enough. Because you can't tell me that you couldn't get something, anything, for Martin Perez. Guy's going to be a free agent. Like, what's the point? You're basically just buying an asset, even if it's small, like an international bonus pool allocation or, you know, a player to be named later or a lottery ticket guy from, like, you know, the short season New York Penn League. Like, I don't know. Get something for the guy. So I'm at least going to hold Chaim Bloom slightly accountable for that, because you can't tell me that there wasn't a team out there that would give even just a smidge, a smackerel of honey, as Winnie the Pooh would say, for Martin Perez. Like, what are we doing here? So you can be frustrated by that as a Red Sox fan. And also one thing that I was struck by in the last week, and this goes back to the trading deadline, which was on Monday, was their inability to move Jackie Bradley Jr. And I don't necessarily fault them for not moving him at the deadline, because it is clear that there truly was no market. You traded Kevin Pillar, who's a better player, a more valuable asset, for essentially nothing, which is, as we said, international bonus pool money. You got the bare minimum in that trade. So I understand that there probably wasn't a market for Bradley, particularly given that, well, Bradley was getting, you know, prorated $11 million, whatever you want to call it. I didn't get into radio to do math. I'm not going to try it on the air. We'll leave that to Maz, who's actually good at math. I certainly am not. But I was struck by the fact that Jackie Bradley Jr. was even on this team to begin with. So I don't fault them for not moving him on Monday. I fault the Red Sox for having Bradley on this team at all this season, for a year that was all about the luxury tax and the reset. And good God, the team has told you. Did you see that tweet the other day, Jimmy, that the Red Sox put out? That tweet with the reset button the second the luxury tax reset on September 1st? Do you see that? And then they deleted it in embarrassment.
Cowards.
Complete cowards. Own it. Own it. We all know what this season was about. We all know what the last 12 months of this franchise has been about. Shedding salary. Resetting the luxury tax. But if that's the case, the most maddening and the most frustrating thing to me as a Red Sox fan, outside of trading Mookie Betts and not getting any pitching in return, is Jackie Bradley Jr.'s presence on this team. And it's not necessarily his presence on this team. It's the presence of his $11 million prorated salary, or whatever it is, on the books. Hold on, wait a minute. You were supposed to just... the whole point of this year was to shed money. And yet you tendered a contract to Jackie Bradley Jr. this past offseason, and you didn't get anything for him. You got no assets for him, and theoretically he just walks away this year. So what was the point? What was the whole point of even having Bradley on the roster in the first place? You could have saved that $11 million and done something differently. If the whole point and the whole purpose of this season was to reset the luxury tax and to save money, then why was Jackie Bradley here? That you should be frustrated with. Not that they couldn't get anything for him at the deadline. That you can't expect that there. But the fact that they tendered him a contract, knowing that it was going to be between $10.5 and $11 million, or $11.5 million, somewhere in that ballpark, they willfully, consciously, and deliberately tendered Jackie Bradley Jr. a contract this past offseason while they were desperately trying to shed salary everywhere else. That's a miscalculation. And that's on Chaim Bloom. Because somebody who is supposed to come in and be creative and find ways to get around the luxury tax and the money limitations, that was the easiest move. It was the first move they made this offseason, was tendering him a contract, and they never should have done it in the first place.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.